It's Radio Free 501c, the podcast of Rogue Tulips Consulting. I'm your host, Cecilia Sopp, and we're so excited to be back for Season 6 and continue bringing you outstanding ideas and thought leaders and different ways of thinking. So don't forget to subscribe because you're not going to want to miss any of it. This week, I'm joined by first-time guest and my longtime friend, Al Rickard, CAE. He's here to talk with us about 21st Century Magazines for Associations. It's March 18, 2024. Welcome to episode 233. Everybody, it's Monday, March 18th. That means it's time for another episode of Radio Free 501c, brought to you by Rogue Tulips Consulting. I'm your host, Cecilia Sepp. I'm a CAE, an ACNP, and I'm the principal and founder of Rogue Tulips. So welcome to our podcast. To our global audience, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you may be. And thanks to everyone for joining us. This week, I don't know how this happened, but this is the first time Al Rickard has been on this podcast. I have known Al for so many years, we've forgotten how long we've known each other. But Al knows more about association management and publishing than most people have probably ever learned. So Al, finally, welcome to the podcast. So glad to have you here. We're going to be talking about 21st Century Magazines for Associations, because people think print is dead, but you have other news on that topic. But before we dive in, Al, please welcome again and say hello to our audience and tell us a little about yourself.
All right. Well, hello, audience. I'm Al Rickard. I'm president of a company called Association Vision. It's a company I founded in 2000. And my career stretches back to the 1980s. I was the original editor of USAE newspaper. I worked at ASAE. I was the original section newsletter editor back in the day when they had section newsletters. I worked at the Snack Food Association as vice president of communications, which was a wonderful job with lots of free snacks. And I worked at the International Association of Convention and Visitor Bureaus, which is now Destinations International. And then I went on to GWSAE, that many people may remember from the 1990s and early aughts. Spent a couple of years at the National Food Processors Association, and that took me up to 2000 when I founded this company. And we've done a lot of work in all areas of communication, especially in publishing, for over 120 associations now.
That is incredible. I didn't realize you'd worked at that many associations. That's fantastic. And Al, you also have the CAE credential. But what was the test like when you took it?
Oh, well, that's a great question. I earned my CAE in 1991. And the test was very different in those days. It was an 8-hour process. And you had to go into a hotel meeting room that was cooled to about 59 degrees. And in the middle of August, I did it. And there was a whole range of test formats. There was the true false. There was the connect the dot thing. There was, you know, essays. There was fill in the blank.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, it went all day long and, you know, starts at 8. And then I think it was about 4 o'clock. We took a short break and we had to come back from that break and we had to write a short term and a long term strategic plan for a fictitious association. We had to read about them and then write these strategic plans.
Wow.
And so we all stumbled out of there at 5:30 or 6, you know, our brains were drained. And but it was a long haul for the CAE exam in those days, but I passed and got it. So I'm very proud of that. But I have to say that I think the new format, which I took a sample of that new format, I don't know, 20 some years ago, and it was hard. It was very hard, harder than any of us expected that went in to take the test that had previously used the other format. So I salute all CAEs out there that have earned their credential because it's a rigorous process.
It is, I think, in any format. But I think it's important for people to know the history of the CAE. As you know, I do a lot of work helping people get ready for the CAE and then maintain it after that. I think it's important for people to realize how much it's evolved over time. Just simply since 2015, when I earned the CAE, we were still doing it on paper with the little Scantron forms and the little blue book that had all the
The
questions
number
in.
two pencil, right?
Exactly. And I remember, and I shared this with my study groups, I was so focused, I thought my pencil was making too much noise when I was filling in the and I thought, oh, everybody's going to get distracted. I better draw quieter because you just get
Boy,
in the zone.
yeah,
But it's
everybody's
really
got a great CAE story. Everybody's been through
that's true. That is so true. But we are not here to talk about the CAE, but I did want to point out that you do have the CAE and you have maintained it ever since, and that it was a very different, very demanding format as well. So I think people would like to know that. And also, if you think 4 hours is a long haul, Al had to do eight, the short break. So I'm very thankful that I got to do the shorter format. I'm just saying, filling out the Scantron form was easy. So no, that's great. And actually, before we segue into our 21st Century Magazines for Associations topic, I did want to say, Al, you were an inspiration to me to get the CAE as a consultant because you had earned it as an association executive, but then maintained it after you became a consultant. And at that point, they didn't really have a track for consultants to get and maintain the CAE. So I held on for a long time. It took about 10 years before I was actually able to take it as a consultant. And ironically, I was not consulting anymore by the time I actually took it because I was looking for a job. So kind of funny how things turn out. So yeah, good times. So we're here talking about magazines. Now, I know a lot of people think magazines really aren't a thing anymore, that people don't read them, they don't print them out, members maybe don't want them anymore. Everything's digital now. But I can tell you, just as a consumer, I have a whole stack of magazines in my living room that I cannot wait to have the time to read. I love touching them, flipping through, looking at the ads, reading the articles, and being able to take my time and not need an electrical source in order to read the magazine. So I think let's talk about that first point I've already mentioned. The conception out there, the belief, conventional wisdom, whatever you like to call it, that print is dead. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I've seen a lot of twists and turns in the publishing world over all these decades, right? And people have been predicting the death of print magazines since about 1990, I think. So we're going on, how many years is that? 35 years now? And they're different today, certainly, than they were back in those days. But it's interesting how they continue, especially for associations. I mean, there's so many associations that still have print magazines because their members say that they like them, find some use for them. They've perhaps survived in the association arena longer than some other sectors of society, commercial pubs and things like that. But it's a different model today, right? It's not just send out the print magazine. There's linkages to all kinds of digital communication and social media and a whole range of things. And the revenue model has changed dramatically. I mean, it used to be much more robust, right, back in the day. But just to give you some idea here, I'm going to read a little comment about Association Communications, which says, "Electronic communications have revolutionized the way associations deliver information and interface with members, perhaps more than any other factor. The ever-expanding array of formats and communication options, from e-newsletters to digital books, blogs, podcasts, and more, have created a continuous 24/7 information cycle and enabled increasingly interactive communications and virtual communities. The speed of technological change and the expanding array of communication format options have been both a bane and a blessing to many associations."
Ooh, I like that. Bane and a blessing.
It's kind of a catchy ending there. So, something somebody might say today, right?
That's right. People
Well,
might say that about social media still
right.
today.
Well, it appeared in this publication,
Which
Publishing
is.
Metrics and Trends. It was published in 2007.
And who published that? Oh, Angarosa.
Yes, the Angarosa
Angarosa Research
Research
Foundation.
Foundation, right? Angela Angarosi used to work for ASAE years ago, worked for Debbie Stratton and her publishing company for many years, and tragically passed away many years ago. And that's, they founded this foundation for her. But anyway, I just thought it was interesting. I happened to look at this, and here it's been many years since that was published, 17, 18.
Team, yeah, you keep asking me to do math, Al. Wordsmith.
So anyway, it's just an illustration of the continuing dialogue, right? And a lot of it's the same, but things change and evolve, hopefully for the better, right? But we always have new challenges, and we've seen a lot in recent years of the pandemic, et cetera. So
That's true.
anyway, I was just going to say that we've seen sort of a comeback of print magazines recently, and I think one of the reasons for that is it's a different type of communication. Like you were talking about, you like to sit and flip through your magazine. And, I think today, and even among young people, right? It's all day long, you're on your devices, you're on your computer, you're on your phone, you're looking at everything. Sometimes you just want to sit down and open the magazine and relax and read it, right? It's like people who read books. A lot of people don't like online books. They want to have the book in their hand and sit in the recliner and read it, et cetera. But I've been very active in the Association Media and Publishing Organization in the last few years. And we saw a lot of demand for people wanting information about print magazines. I mean, we had, webinars and other sessions about every kind of digital topic you can imagine. And a lot of people kept saying, when are you going to do something on the print magazine? Because we still have one. We need to, make the most of it, et cetera. And so I think one of the lessons is that people want choices. So give the people what they want, give them the choices. And interestingly, I've seen a number of associations do readership surveys in recent years. And when they ask people what format they want their communication in, and their magazine specifically, it's very consistent. About half the people say they want their magazine in print and digital form. And about 30% say they just want the print version, and about 20% say they just want the digital. So it kind of nets out a little bit favoring the print format. So that's kind of interesting, and it seems to hold true across different industries and professions.
I think that makes sense to me for a lot of reasons. I'm a person who likes to access information in a variety of ways. So I like to look at stuff online. I'm always looking stuff up quickly on Google or Google Bard and doing some research that way. But I do like to touch something and have something tangible. And as a longtime association management professional, I'm a former membership director, I'm a former volunteer leader. Chip development director. And I know people like to have something tangible that represents their experience as being a member of the organization because you get it in the mail. You can see if your name's in it. You can see if your friends' names are in it, or you're going to read a useful article or maybe see an ad about the upcoming conference. And the magazines don't have to be huge. That is one thing I've noticed, and maybe you have some comments on now. I've noticed magazines aren't as big as they used to be because there's not as many ads. And so, but you still think, put out maybe a skinny magazine, right?
Yeah, I think in general they're shorter. And it's like you said, there's not as many ads, certainly. So that's one reason. But given the diversity of communication options, you can produce a magazine that's, I don't know, 60 pages instead of 100 pages, for example, and you're still going to deliver a lot of meaningful content. And there's a limit to how much people are going to read in each issue. So, I think it makes sense. And, when you talk about printing cost and postage cost and all that, it adds up really fast. So, as every association has discovered. So.
That's true. Well, and I think that's why I think a hybrid magazine is a great approach in today's world, because especially now that people are starting to travel again. So maybe you get your print version at home and you flip through it and you can leave it on your desk and then look at the digital version while you're traveling. You can look at it on your device and you can put hyperlinks in there to take you to some other information. So I think there's a lot of ways people can build out their communication chain. And you had mentioned as we were preparing for this episode that you think the magazine could be the center hub of all that communication chain.
Yeah, I mean, I think magazines, they hold tremendous potential to be a content hub for the association and under the association magazine brand. I mean, look at ASAE and what they've done with associations now, for example. They got the Daily Now and the magazine, and there's, the convention pubs and everything all tied into that brand. So there's a lot of ways to do that effectively, and every association's got blogs and podcasts and social media and everything that can be linked to it in some way. I mean, think about when you go to LinkedIn, for example. I'm scrolling through, I'm looking at all my colleagues and what they're talking about, and a lot of people are linking to the magazine. They said, "Hey, we just put out this magazine. Here's what's in there. Go get it." I mean, so there's all those connection points now that never were there before. So it's an opportunity for people to read it digitally if they want, or read it in print.
Well,
And yeah,
oh, I'm
go
sorry.
ahead.
Oh, okay, I'll go. We're like those gophers in the Warner Brothers. No, I insist. After you. No. But I was just going to say, thinking about my own communication hub and content hub, I don't do anything in hard copy for my company, but we have the newsletter that goes out every week. I write a message, an article for that, which then goes on the blog, which I then record that message and push it out on the podcast channel. And then we put the audio version link on the website as well, so people have multiple access points. So that is a real world example from my own experience. We also do emails about specific things. Like every week, we do a podcast email for every episode. We may say, hey, we want to make sure people remember this course is coming up. Let's send another email. So everything is linked that way. And to your point, I think using the magazine as that hub for content, it's like the content home and then distribution hub in a way.
Yeah, and I think it has a logical home within all these other communication vehicles. I mean, you and I have worked together on communication audits, for example, and I've done, 15 or 20 communication audits over the years. And one of the things that we always find is that associations communicate too much. And they always come into the process, they're like, our members are not listening to us. And they sometimes even say they're getting too much stuff, right? You send out too many blast emails and people tune out what's going on. So part of the process is, winnowing down certain communication channels that maybe are being overused and diversify so that there's different touch points for members and they can get different kinds of information in different places. And the magazine is where you can deliver a lot of the long form content that they still say they want and need. So that's a good way to do it. And I thought it was interesting. I looked at the 2023 Naylor benchmarking report, and they found some interesting things this past year that sort of tie into perhaps the continuing life of print magazines. They found that the value of traditional conferences, trade shows, and face-to-face events went up 10% last year. So more back to more in-person things, as you would expect after the pandemic. But I thought that was interesting. And they also found that associations have shifted away from social media when communicating with members, preferring to connect with them through email and the association website. It seems counterintuitive, right? We've been going the other direction for a number of years, but sometimes you go way over here and you got to come back to get a little bit more balance.
That's right.
And there was a finding that in 2002, the average number of monthly member touch points decreased for the first time since 2019. So again, it's sort of winnowing down to the most important communications, not just doing the quantity. And half the association said that members say they're too busy to read everything, and the association doesn't target or segment communications enough. So I'm sure a lot of association people have experienced that same thing. So I think that was interesting.
Well, and I agree with that wholeheartedly. We really have no excuse not to target our communications because we have databases that tell us a lot of information about our members and what they do and how they experience it. We have email inbox members instead of mailbox members now. So they're the people, they're kind of passive. They receive, they read, maybe they don't interact or engage or respond. And then you all the way up to the people who are really involved and will respond and post comments and share information and things like that. But I really think we don't have an excuse any longer to not at least segment by member type when we're doing communication. So a student, different information than somebody who's an experienced professional or somebody who's got a long career in an industry. So I think we could do that. That was actually something. This is not a bash, so save the angry postcards, everyone. But a couple of years ago, I got my first renewal notice for my ASA consultant membership. And it was basically the same email that everybody else gets, all the association staff. And so one of my benefits was access to consultants. Excuse me. So I wrote back and I said, well, I am a consultant. That's not really a benefit for me. And I said, I don't expect you to write 46,000 individual emails, but I think you could segment by member type and write us just one message for each member type. Membership person wrote me back and said, you're right. We can do better. We're going to work on that. And my second renewal notice was for consultants and said, this is
Oh,
what
well, that's
consultants
good.
get. Yeah.
Yeah, and just like you said, it has to be segmented. So another finding that came out of this report last year was that the average association communicates with its members in print twice per month, which is up from once per month in 2019. So not a huge volume of communication there, but sort of significant, the trend, right? And
Right.
it's the highest it's been in 7 years. And so, there's a little bit of data that shows that there's some interest in that format. But there's different ways when you look at a magazine and how much it costs and how it goes to members. I mean, there's lots of ways to slice and dice solutions. And we discovered a lot of these during the pandemic. I mean, I worked with so many associations that said, what do we do? People aren't in their offices. It doesn't make sense to mail print magazines there. We're losing advertising revenue. I mean, everyone's had gone through that story. So some of the solutions they came up with, a couple associations are like, all right, we're just going all digital till further notice. And they did for several months, and they all went back to print at some point after that. Some reduced the frequency. I've seen associations that look at their member list and they say, okay, does everybody here need to get the magazine, or do we only send it to certain member types? Like, for example, maybe the student members don't get the print magazine. They might be paying a lower dues rate anyway. So, and perhaps they're more likely to read online than an older member. So there's lots of different strategies that you can use. You can do an opt-in or an opt-out program so that people can choose again what they want, and you're not sending it to people that don't want it that way. So that's a program that I would advocate everybody do, so that you're, like I said, you're giving them the choices, you're not forcing things on them.
I like that. I especially in today's world, there's no reason not to give people options. And I remember, again, you and I have been around this profession for decades now. And I remember when we were talking, it was probably late 90s, early 2000s, about the members building their own experience, very much the way consumers were starting to do that with their online memberships and buying things. And when I say online membership for a consumer, I mean like Amazon, Walmart, Target, the big sellers online. And you could create your own shopping experience and create a profile, and they would tag things that you might find of interest. So again, there especially now, there's really no reason not to do that. But I thought of a question for you, Al, about the future of magazines. So you've made a really great presentation and argument about offering all the content in different ways, depending on who that segment is. One of the things I like to do, in addition to everything else, is listen to audiobooks. So, do you think there is a future of like an audio magazine for associations?
Perhaps. I mean, it's interesting you mentioned the books because, sometimes you go on a long road trip, right? And you love to have that audio book and you can relax and listen to it. And arguably, you could do the same thing with a magazine. But As I think about it off the top of my head, magazines have different types of content in different places, right? I mean, you've got your little news bits, you got a couple columns, you've got the long feature articles. Maybe that lends itself less to more of a continuous audio format. But
True.
I don't know, it's an interesting thought. I kind of like it. But
Maybe excerpts, audio excerpts to get people interested in going and getting the magazine.
yeah, could be done that way. But I wanted to show one example here. This is Aerospace America magazine.
Oh, wow.
Got a cover story in here about traffic in space. It's all these satellites and everything floating around in space, and sometimes they run into each other. So they have all kinds of interesting articles about stuff like that. But anyway, they did an amazing job years ago of looking at all their content and integrating it through the Aerospace America brand, right? If you go to their website, AIAA.org, you can go to their magazine site, and it's really robust with all kinds of online HTML-based content that everybody likes. And then they also have the print magazine that I just showed, and the content from across the organization is linked in there. They're posting things in real time throughout the month, so it's not just, once a month when the magazine comes out. So they've done an effective job of doing that kind of integration that I was talking about before.
That's a great example. And is I guess that's the members only part of the website.
You can look at the magazine as a non-member.
Oh, that's
So
awesome. So could you repeat the name of that association one more time in case someone in the audience might want to go check it out?
yeah, it's AA or AIAA,
Yeah.
the Aerospace. Let me make sure I get it right here. Well, Aerospace America is the name of the magazine, but it's the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics.
Cool.
AIAA.org.
So check that out, everyone, if you want to see an integration of content in real time and with publication deadlines. So, I was also wondering as I was thinking about our conversation today, do you have any thoughts on artificial intelligence and its influence on association magazines?
Well, yes, it's certainly a trend that we've seen. And I have one example of a magazine here that the cover story was written by AI. And the cover was designed by DALL-E 2. And this was back in February of last year, which is only about a couple, 3 months after ChatGPT was first launched. And there was a fictitious author, right? And you read the whole story and you get to the end, and then there's a little author bio. Oh, this was written by ChatGPT. And it was really interesting. And so then the following issue, the March issue, we did a column on how it was done and the process of working with ChatGPT to write it. And the basic conclusion was, okay, ChatGPT, it operates as kind of a junior level reporter. It gets all this basic stuff in there, but you got to go in and you got to massage it. You got to work with it. You got to check it because it hallucinates, as everyone knows. So,
Right.
interesting word. But anyway, and then the Contract Management magazine that did this, they showed sort of the outtakes of the covers. And talked about here's the prompt we put in, here's the image that came out. And so it's hugely educational. And this was in the very early days of ChatGPT. And so that was quite fascinating. And I can try to grab the cover here in a little bit, maybe to
If you
show you what it looked like.
yeah, that would be great for the people watching the video version, especially after the Wonka fiasco in Scotland recently with the generative AI. I'd like to see a good generative AI. Oh, look at that. And it even has like an iRobot image on the front.
Right. And
Here.
so there's a lot of discussion about the prompt that was used to create this image. And so this is what appeared on the front of it.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah. And if you're listening and not watching, that magazine cover featured What looked like a robot, very similar to the robots from the Will Smith blockbuster iRobot. It
Yeah.
sounds like it's working, and it was, and it's in Contract Management magazine, if you want to look that up, from February 2023.
Yeah, so that's it's
Very
published
cool.
by the Contract Management, National Contract Management Association, NCMAHQ.org. And you can see if the I was
We
going
have
to
a
try to
lot of
find
great
the MARC issue,
examples.
but you've seen the dramatic cover there, the Dolly 2 design.
Yes, and I
And
have to say, just from my perspective, that robot looked a little like the coworker you don't want to sit next to. It kind of looked like the person who's like kind of trying to take your job. But maybe that was the
right.
point, right? Because part of the article was about AI is not going to take your job yet. So that's a good thing, I guess. And then what's this one? Update
This is
artificial
IR
intelligence.
Update magazine's humans are still in charge.
Thank goodness.
So this is one of several issues for this magazine that focuses on AI issues. It's the National Investor Relations Institute, and they're very concerned about AI and how it's used in the capital markets and investing world and everything. So,
Yeah, I think it's
and
probably more serious in finance than magazine publishing. That's just my take, you know.
but yeah, I mean, it affects every industry. I mean, I interviewed ChatGPT about the door and hardware industry for the Door and Hardware magazine, and it was pretty accurate. It gave a lot of good answers, and didn't require very much editing at all. And
That's great.
Door Security and Safety magazine.
I usually use Google Bard. I don't use ChatGPT because I usually use it for research, and Bard is a large language model. They've just added a generative AI aspect to it, but that's what I use it for. I'm very much a human in charge of AI because I use it as a research tool. And you're absolutely right. It is like the junior editor or junior reporter. They go out and gather the information and then you use it, and I always make sure I add a citation, which I think is important that this information came from Google Bard. I didn't do the research myself necessarily. I just analyzed it. So, well, you know, Al, I wanted to cover a couple other things. So, one thing you had mentioned as we were prepping is there's never a wrong time to launch a new publication. So, could you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. I mean, I've been involved in the launch of several magazines in my career, including some with my company. And in 2002, the National Association of Convenience Stores launched a magazine called the Knacks Magazine. And this is the inaugural issue that came out
There
in
it is.
March of 2002.
Yeah,
And I mean, obviously, this was a few months after 9/11, and the country was in a recession. And Knacks is a very successful association, a large association with one of the largest trade shows in the country. 25,000 people kind of trade show, the huge exhibit hall. And there was a very crowded magazine field with about seven different trade pubs serving the convenience store market. And, we worked on launching that magazine in 2002, and it was hugely successful. And to me, it was a lesson that if you've got the right product, the right niche, then you can launch it at any time, even in the middle of a recession. And that magazine did $1 million in revenue in the first year.
that's
So,
incredible.
I mean, way beyond expectations, right? So, that was a very
Wow.
positive success story about that magazine. And that same year, I worked with another association, Sleep Products Association. We launched a magazine for their foundation. They had a very successful trade magazine called Bedtimes, and that went to all the companies that sell mattresses and sleep products, the 5S's, Sealy, Serta, Simmons, all those kinds of companies.
Oh my
And
gosh,
so,
yeah, they do all start with the letter S.
right. And so they had a foundation that was devoted to, educating people about good sleep, right? And so they wanted a consumer magazine that would, be distributed in sleep product stores and other places. And so we launched Sleep Savvy magazine.
I love that
And
name. That's great.
that came out 6 times a year, and that did $500,000 in revenue the first year. So again, another successful launch at a time when you might not expect it, but if it's the right product at the right, with the right positioning, then it can succeed.
That is, I am so glad that you shared that because I think a lot of organizations are afraid to move forward with any project because they think it's not going to work, it's risky, we're not going to make money on it. But those are two wonderful examples of go ahead and try because if it is the right thing at the right time, it'll work. And if it's not, then you don't have to keep doing it.
But I would say that in today's world, it's got to be a different model. You're not just going to go out and rake in all those hundreds of thousands of dollars in ad revenue right out of the gate on just a print magazine. But now it's like integrated advertising is most associations are doing. I mean, linking it to web advertising, e-newsletters, social media, all those kinds of things. That's the way to try to mitigate some of the print magazine revenue losses. There's a number of associations that are successful in, linking ads that appear in the online magazine to the print magazine, integrated buys. And, I've seen so many companies that want both. They still want the print, but they want the digital in addition to it. And they're oftentimes willing to pay as much or more than they used to pay just for the print magazine. So, there's ways to integrate things and preserve revenue, I guess, is the message there.
Wow, that is a great suggestion. I don't think we always think that way. And again, it's not just about magazines, it's about any experience that we want to have with a sponsor or an advertiser, anyone who's supporting us with revenue to get their name out too. So I think that's a great example of thinking through, well, how can we give them a broader experience, a better experience, maybe a more targeted experience, more than just we'll put your logo on a sign, at the conference, right? Because
Right.
people think that's so exciting, oh, you put my logo on a sign? Wow. It's
Yeah.
like there's more that could be done in that area. So now, Al, before we wrap up, there's one more thing I want you to share, and you need to describe it for the listening audience. You have one more magazine cover to share with us, and it has something special about it linked to you personally, and I believe it's called Sheriff Magazine.
Yes, it's Sheriff Magazine. I mean, I've spent my career producing magazines, but in one example, I was a model on the cover of Sheriff Magazine, and you can see me there. This was in
That's neat.
2000, so I look a little different today than I did then. But myself and another person, we modeled for the cover of Sheriff Magazine.
That's
So I've
great.
never
And
been a sheriff, just in full disclosure here.
what you just played one on TV.
Right.
And for those listening, instead of watching, the way Al looks different is he had a mustache at the time that he does not have now. And he actually hasn't had it for a long time because pretty much since I've known Al, he has not had a mustache. And
Yeah, I
I've
think I
known
made
him.
the transition in 2005 or thereabouts.
Yeah. Oh gosh, and I think I've known you even a little longer than that. So, but I don't remember you having the mustache, but I digress. Anyway, but that's how he looks different. That's a fun thing. So, well, everyone, Al Rickard, CAE, Association Professional, Consultant, Magazine Expert, and supermodel. You're sharing today. So, Al, thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad you were here. I'm looking forward to having you back to talk about other publishing issues because we did not get to talk about AM&P and what that is like now. So I think, we should have you back to talk about that.
Okay, I'll be happy
But
to come back.
that'd be
Thank you very
great.
much.
You're welcome. So, but Al, before we sign off for this week, I like to ask my guests, what's the one thought you'd like the audience to take away today? And then how can they get in touch with you if they'd like to contact you and learn more?
Print's not completely dead. If you want to reach me, it's arickard@associationvision.com, website associationvision.com.
That's great. Thank you. And I have to say, Al, that is the shortest closing thought we've ever had on this podcast. So that's great. Well, thank you. That's wonderful. Well, we have to go rogue for now, but we'll be back next time with another exciting episode. So please remember to subscribe on your favorite podcast service so you don't miss a thing. If you'd like to learn more about Rogue Tulips Consulting and how we can help your organization bloom outside the box, check out our website, roguetulips.com. And if you're interested in earning the CAE or maintaining your CAE designation, we have an education program called Rogue Tulips Education. It used to be called the 501c League, and it still has its own website because it's so big, it needs it, the 501cleague.net. So check that out if you're looking for some courses or a study group. Well, that's it for this week, everyone. On behalf of Al and myself, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.